Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, everybody? It's IBS Jesus here with another NFL fan cast. We're doing the Green Bay Packers today. What I'm going to do is I'm going to do NFC North and AFC North. So we're going to start with the Green Bay Packers. I've got with me special guest Wallace Glenn. He's from our sports group, Iconoclistically Bombastic Sports. You can check us out at iconoclisticallybombastic.com. I don't know why I'm distracted. Sorry. And you can also check us out on Twitter at sports_IB. All right, we got Wallace on the line. I'm going to go ahead and get him on so we can talk some Green Bay Packers.
Hello?
What's up, Wallace? How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good, man. A little bit. I'm a little bit under the weather, so I'm a little hoarse right now. But feeling okay. You know, this weather is in Wisconsin.
That's good. Set this up on the on the website real quick. All right, I just posted, so maybe we get some callers. If not, it's all good, man. I think you and I can cover everything Packer-wise.
Mm-hmm. I can remember that it's been a long off season.
Yeah, it really has, man. But the thing, the good thing about you guys is you don't do a lot of stuff during the off season that requires a lot of analyzing.
Right.
Which,
yeah,
I kind of like that. We'll go ahead and start with the 2014 Green Bay Packers. You guys were 12-4. You were first in points per game, 30.4, sixth in yards per game at 386.1. You were eighth in passing yards, 266.3, and 11th in rushing yards at 119.8.
Okay,
you,
I didn't know that.
Yeah. What do you attribute to the efficiency of Green Bay Packers' offense last year? What made them tick?
I believe it was I think it was two things. One is we finally got an offensive line that started protecting Aaron Rodgers and opening up holes in the running game. Then two is Eddie Lacy. When they drafted him, then we finally had a back that the defense has to respect a little bit. You know, they can play action more effectively, play action. And now Aaron Rodgers is, you know, he's just more healthy now, except for he did get a little injured late in the year. But he's not just getting under duress every play. Every play goes back to pass. He used to just be attacked. But he still had the record, had the statistics. That's what was amazing about it. But that's what I contributed to, the efficiency.
Yeah, I can agree with that, man. I took a look at some of the numbers or your offense, and I'll just tell you the rankings. So we're gonna start with Aaron Rodgers. So I got four people that I thought were key cogs to the offensive engine. Of course, Aaron Rodgers, he was number seven in passing yards, number three in touchdowns, actually number two in overall quarterback rating behind Tony Romo, believe it or not. Ed Lacy, he was number seven in yards. He was tied for number three in touchdowns. And then we get to your receiving core. You had Jordy Nelson, who was number four in total yards, tied for number two in touchdowns. He had 13. Then you go to Randy
Cobb, who was
number 11 in total yards, but he had 12 touchdowns, put him at number three on the list. So you're talking 25 reception touchdowns or receiving touchdowns between those two. You got a power back. You got an efficient quarterback. And I think out of all the teams I've covered so far, this is by far the most potent offense that I've seen. I think the Cowboys had a good offense. It was actually spectacular, but it's just something about your numbers for the offense. And I think it goes back mm-hmm. to how you guys were able to finish drives last year. Like I said, first 10
yeah,
points
yeah.
in the game, but you're
in the red zone. I think there's rain somewhere high up in the red zone scoring.
Yeah, I can imagine. Because everything else, it doesn't necessarily stand out as spectacular. If you talk about those four individuals there, you know, you look at their individual numbers, they're very good. But as mm-hmm. a team, as a core, the offense didn't necessarily stand out except for points per game. I mean, that it doesn't get more efficient than 30 points a game. That's amazing. You're talking
mm-hmm.
16 games. And then you had yeah. one game where you didn't do too well against Buffalo, and you still averaged.
Oh,
so.
Yeah, that was just a bad day at the office for everybody.
Yeah, we
that's all I can say. It was no explanation, huh?
I said we covered that. We talked about the Bills, and it was funny because we were talking about how good that defensive line was in Buffalo.
Yeah.
So I took a look
at
how good your offensive line was last year. And in regards to the Packers, from 2013, you guys were ranked number 10 in offensive line play by Pro Football Focus.
Mm-hmm.
Your 2014 offensive, yeah, they were number 10 in 2013.
I didn't even know they was that high in 13.
Yeah.
You know?
2014, you guys finished at number 4 overall. So that definitely
big jump. Big jump.
Yeah, they,
that's because of the health of Brian Bulaga. He finally played a whole season and
mm-hmm.
solidified a lot.
Yeah, and they really liked T.J. Lang. They were talking about
mm-hmm.
The interior line. And then just like you said, the ability for Eddie Lacy to knock out yards
mm-hmm.
and then setting up the play action. When you get an offense moving like that, I think I talk about that sometimes in the thread when we talk about teams, and I talk about balance and spacing, et cetera. You know, like you want to have
mm-hmm.
your deep threat or speed receiver in Randall Cobb. You want your possession guy or all-around receiver in Jordy Nelson.
Yeah.
And then you want a power back to help so you can free
mm-hmm.
up these guys when you got a quarterback that can roll out like Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, that's a key
position.
Factor.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
you definitely need that.
That's
so, 2014 Packer offense, you know, 12-4, 30 points per game. Not much you can say about that, but they're just really good.
They'll be better.
I'm
going to say they're going to be better this year on offense.
Yeah. We'll get to that in a second because I've got a couple questions about this year.
Mm-hmm.
Who was your biggest surprise last year on offense before we switch subject?
You said the biggest surprise?
Yeah.
Biggest surprise? There's really no surprises except for it was really no surprise. You just expected everything out of what they, you know, what they did. You expect Aaron Rodgers
uh-huh.
to do what he do year in, year out. You know, expect
mm-hmm.
that from Cobb. And Jordy Nelson, we expect that. We expect that from, Lacy and Stark. Stark is the backup running back. He used to be the starter. And the surprise to me was the line. The line, I have to say. The offensive line to move up in the top 5 in ranking. And, got the health of Bulaga, and he helped stabilize it. So that was the biggest surprise to me, now that I think about it.
Did you have any disappointments from 2014's offense? Anybody disappointed?
On offense?
Yeah.
I was, you know what? Funny, the stats that Eddie Lacy had, I was disappointed how he started the season. And he realized that, too. He said that he's going to work on the exact things, but he started off slow. He started off slow. He started, averaging 50 yards per game, like, the first 4 games. And he was doing too much trying to be a scat back, you know, spinning and dancing. I was very disappointed in that. And but by the middle of the season, he realized he's just going to be a downhill runner. And that's what he did like the last part of the season. So he already said he's going to do that from now on. He's going to stop all that dancing and spinning and, you know. So that's all. That was what it disappointed me the most on the offense.
Yeah, he's NFL-wise. Now, in college, I can't, like, it just seems so long ago, even though it wasn't that long ago. I just can't really remember how I thought he would be coming into the league. But, you know, the 49ers have played him a couple times. With ever since about 2011, the Packers been on TV a whole lot now. He reminds me of Marshawn Lynch when he plays the way he's supposed to play. You know, you talked about him dancing around in the hole and stuff, but Eddie Lacy's he's a real durable, strong back, and when he hits the hole, he's usually good for 3 to 4 yards minimum if he gets the handoff.
Yeah, and he carries it for more. He carries them for more, but he does tend to dance around a lot. He does tend to do that, but he started figuring out, or somebody got to him and told him he just needs to run down his, just use his 240, 50 pounds in time. That's what he started doing. But he is nimble-footed. He is nimble-footed. That's one thing with the scouts license coming out of college.
I think I know we get sidetracked just a tad bit, but when you talk about Alabama backs, the one knock on Alabama backs is that they have so much baggage, mileage coming out of college that they don't tend to pan out in the league. I think that was the gripe about Mark Ingram, the gripe about Trent Richardson. Eddie Lacy seems to be the exception.
I don't know about that. If y'all didn't know, I'm an Alabama fan, too. I've been a Clemson Tide fan for 25 years or more. I'm a huge Alabama fan. I happened to live down there for a few years when I went to college and my last couple of years of high school, and I was fell in love with them then. So I know a lot about Alabama, but I don't recall about the baggage. I need some examples of that. What kind of baggage they have coming out?
When we get done with this, I'll see if I can't find some articles, because I swear I've read it before. Because I like Mark Ingram. I was a huge Mark Ingram fan. Thought he would be great to be. And
I didn't think he was going to be that good. I knew it was more of a line. I thought Trent Richardson was going to be great. I thought he was made for the pros. No, I was wrong on that one.
I
was wrong.
I'll make sure I look it up and see if I can get some information, because I swear I've read scouts pretty much after the knock on
I never heard of that, though. We've had some disappointment. Yeah, we've had some disappointments with Ingram and but I don't recall no baggage, unless it's because of Nick Saban, how he prepares them. And they always said Nick Saban overworks them in college. That's the thing. I think they said they already have a lot of wear and tear on them.
Yeah, that's what I meant about baggage. Like, it's really, I think it only came up during the Saban tenure. I don't recall very much about that before Nick Saban, but he
was a Saban.
It was a pro-style, heavy run offense. So,
And he tends to wear them down in practice and then, in games. They have lots of carries. So they have a little bit more wear than the wear and tear than normal backs do coming out of college.
I think Lacy's definitely started to separate himself from the other two that we mentioned. I look forward to him taking that next step into being being a top five back. Like, honestly, I think he can do that. I think he's got the line. The passing game is working in a way that it should free up more lanes for him. And he's actually not a bad option out the backfield to catch the ball either. He doesn't have stone hands.
Yeah, he's getting better.
So I can see him taking that next step next year. So It'll be interesting.
I agree.
You can do that.
The thing about him is he realized what he was. But I'm just saying he realized what he was wrong doing, what he was bad in. Now he, you know, you got to realize what you're doing wrong. So he's gonna come out the gate. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We'll roll into your defense, which I was very critical of the defense all year last year.
That's where we are misunderstanding it.
Yeah.
You got to know the Packers to know they are not as bad as y'all think they are.
The 2014 Packer defense. Just talking 2014. We haven't gotten to the new defense. We talked about the old defense last year. Number 15 in yards per game, 346.4. Number 10 passing defense in passing yards, 226.4. Number 23 rushing yards per game, 119.9. And then number 13 in points per game at 21.8. The first question.
Well, it's not bad.
Yeah. I'm gonna give you the floor and let you tell everybody. What was your impression of the 2014 Packers defense?
My impression was that they was bad. What happened is that they just overstayed the welcome, or overstayed the linebackers. I can't even think of that name. The two starting inside linebackers last year, Brad Jones, and do you remember the other one?
AJ Hawk
from Iowa. AJ Hawk. They overstayed. They just kept them around too long, and it caused the overall run defense to suffer. Because they should have got rid of them or drafted in that position, but they wasn't drafting inside backers for a few years, and it caught up with them. But once they got rid of those two, start benching them, and they moved. I can't think of nothing right now. But they moved. Just one second. The outside linebacker, all pro.
You talking about Clay Matthews?
Yeah, Clay Matthews. I can't think of nothing. Yeah, but once they moved him to inside linebacker, they put in, I believe, Jamari Lattimore at the other linebacker, and they just took off. They took off. People don't realize that their run defense ended up the year almost like in the top 10. By the end of the year, from where they was early in the year.
The end of the year. Well, I actually talked about this in my podcast on the New York Jets that I did by myself. I'm starting to not like when we take these small sample sizes try to prove some type of like point. Like, you know, you can't take six games and say, well, the season, you know what I'm saying? So I like the word you said, they ended in that time frame. They ended up almost top 10. Because overall, they still were the number 23rd rushing.
Yeah, and, but they was like in last, they was last all year after week six. They was in like last place. So they made that move. After the move of Matthews and Lattimore, they took off.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because that was falling into my next question, because I needed a Packer fan opinion, because I didn't get to watch them as closely as I would like. So when you guys moved Clay Matthews to the middle, did you feel like that took away from the defense and other aspects like your pass rush?
Pass rush. I know what you're saying. But no, it didn't. Actually, it ticked up because Clay Matthews' sack total went up when he went inside, because he was playing like all over the field from the inside, and at outside he was just in one area, and they could just double team him. But at inside he was moving around, and his sack total picked up after he moved there. He got probably 80% of his sack total after he moved, so he only had two. Go ahead.
Did you guys blitz him more, or was it just you felt like he was more instinctive in the middle?
Right. That's it. Yeah, they didn't blitz no more. They didn't blitz that much under their defensive coordinator. He was more, like you say, instinctive. And then Mike Neal picked up his play. He's an outside linebacker. And Nick Carey finally started playing. He's a former high draft pick, first rounder. He's in a contract year coming up, so he's going to step it up. I promise you that. But, they picked up the play.
For a 3-4 defense, the Packers are very passive, I want to say. If I could compare our defense to just a tad bit, we're passive. We don't blitz, about it. But we get a lot of pressure from our front. The Packers, to me, don't get that same amount of pressure as the other 3-4 defenses, yet they find a way to be decent in the secondary. Do you attribute that to your scheme or to the actual player personnel within the secondary?
I think it's more the scheme. But they the outside linebackers provide a lot of the pressure. You know, in that 3-4 they clog it up and try to free up the linebackers. That's why the linemen don't get a lot of sacks or pressure. They do it from their linebackers and four outside back, the four backers they got. But in their defense though, he will forget the defensive lineman. He'll be back this year. DJ Rogers. He missed the whole season last year, and that hurt.
We got a caller on the line. I'm going to see who this is real quick, and we'll get them in the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, you're on the platform, Fancast, with the Green Bay Packers, Wallace Glenn.
This is Chris Sales, man.
Oh, what's up, Chris?
What's up, fellas?
What's up, Chris?
You know, my arch nemesis, my guy, Mr. Wallace Glenn on the line. I had to call.
Okay. Finally got you on here.
Hey, Chris, we're talking about the Packers defense right now. What was your impression of the Green Bay Packers defense last year?
I'm going to be honest with you, man. I think overall they were a little bit better than I had seen it in previous years. I mean, a lot of times you would look at Green Bay and you would look at the offense having to carry them defense could hold. But last year I looked at them and they looked a lot better overall than I've seen in the past couple of years where they could, I wouldn't call them dominant, but I would say they did, they had enough to – in a lot of games where the offense didn't have to carry them.
Mm-hmm. You're right about that.
Now, the Packers played the Cowboys.
At Green Bay.
I have to laugh because given the events of today and this conversation is just ironic. But the Packers played the Cowboys and I'm sure you got a good chance to assess their entire team. Now, we already talked about the offense. Could you give us your opinion on the offense as well?
Well, the offense is the offense. As long as you got 12 back there, it's going to be explosive. I mean, you guys know I have no love for the Green Bay Packers, but I give up respect we do. And I've long said, that man, as far as I'm concerned, we can talk about all these other cats. 12 to me, the best quarterback in the game. Okay,
it just you're right.
When he's back there at the controls, the one thing about him, man, he's got great patience. He's got those legs, and one thing that he does and that everybody can do, and that is he can throw accurately on the move.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody can throw on the move, But, yeah, you know, I mean, tell you how he kind of, you know, he reminds me of to an extent. I mean, not the same way, but, you know, I'm an old school guy, okay? And I grew up watching guys that could, you know, run and throw, even though when it wasn't fast for him to do so. And the guy that I catch a lot of flack for, you guys know in the group, you know, and I proclaim I think he's one of the greatest, if not the greatest of all time, and don't nobody agree with me, but it's John Elway, okay? One thing about
John Elway,
you say what you want, you know what I'm saying, about John Elway. John Elway could throw the ball on the move.
Yeah.
He wasn't as physically gifted as 8, as 12 is, but...
That's 12. I thought you said he wasn't physically gifted.
No, he was physically gifted,
but Rodgers is
on a whole nother level. So when you got somebody like Rodgers, and you got, you know, he's got a talented bunch of receivers out there, and he's got Lacy back, I think that offense is very explosive. And, I want to ask, it's a question if I may before I cut out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, brother, so I'm looking at a lot of stuff, man, and I'm seeing, you know, with the Packers, and maybe rightfully so, but I'm seeing a lot of stuff where a lot of experts are saying they are hands down coming into this season the best team in the NFC.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You agree? So even with the addition, you know, a couple of additions that the Seattle made, namely
they made additions to me. It's Jimmy Graham, and they just made a good safety or some of the holes. It's not like they brought in some explosive receivers all of a sudden. I don't think they're much better on offense because they lost their center. They lost a key center to get him. So that line isn't going to be as good as it was.
No doubt.
That's why.
No doubt.
Yeah?
And I can respect that. Yeah, but look, it was good talking to y'all fellas. I'm going to let y'all get on with it, but just check it real quick, man. You know, Seth, I like what you're doing over there, man. You know, I just started a little show myself, man, and I'm definitely going to need to get our brothers on when the season come up, man. So, you know,
I'll be on there.
Going to get at it, my brother, and I want to get you on as well. So I'm going to get y'all to info
a
little bit later. And, you know, I'll be shouting out all the folks at IBS as well, you know?
All right.
No problem.
All right, I appreciate it, fellas. I'm going to keep on listening, but I'll hang up there.
All right. Take care.
All right, go.
Yeah, that's
you were talking about B.J. Raji. I saw some stuff on B.J. Raji. And the guys at Pro Football Focus, you know, they do the whole game-by-game, play-by-play analysis. His grade is pretty bad. But I think of B.J. Raji, I think of B.J. Raji like Tony Ferguson in the sense that he's not really there to make plays. He's just there to take up space to keep the blockers off the linebackers.
That's
so
what they need.
And I was going to roll into the offseason, and he's the first person I noted that you guys re-signed. And I think he was coming off a pretty injury-filled season last year.
Yeah, he just tore his bicep.
Yeah. The Packers think that he's important, and you can't really say too much about a guy that takes up blocks. As long as you got the linebackers behind him, and you feel that they do. So I'm assuming you're looking at next year's defense is doing much better than 2014.
Right. Because of, like I said, because of B.J. Raji, they were missing that big man in the middle. Because what happened is that year before that, they had moved him to the defensive end, the 3-4 defensive end, and he had just came off of almost a Pro Bowl year. I believe he was in a Pro Bowl when they won the Super Bowl. And they moved in the end, and his performance suffered. So last year they said, we move him back in the middle, where he dominated at, and then he was looking great in camp and everything. Then he tore his bicep, and that ruined that middle. They had to bring in that guy, I forgot his name, Detroit Guion. And he's not as big as Raji, Latroy Guion. And he's not as big as Raji, and they suffered that early in the year, their inside defense. Now with Rodgy back and they re-signed LaTroy and Mike Daniels, is becoming almost right at the all-pro level, the defensive tackle.
Now, I have to ask a question before we go fully into the 2015 offseason, because I think it's only right. You guys were so close to making it to the Super Bowl. What happened in that NFC Championship game?
What? Okay, I'm going to ask you a question. What didn't happen is what you need to ask. My memory can't even go back to remember all of the mistakes in the last quarter. Some people were going over it at one time. They counted 10 mistakes that happened in that last quarter. If one of those mistakes didn't happen, just one, the Packers would have won the game. It was a perfect storm, just a perfect storm. That's all you can say. A missed tackle here, a stupid play by A.J. Hawk where when they gave up the fake punt or something, fake field goal for the touchdown.
Yeah.
And he runs up to the doggone kick and left the guy wide open. That was just a dumb error. Then the main thing was the onside kick. It was that guy that what's his name? I can't think of nothing right now. The wide receiver.
I remember the play. I didn't
Jordy Nelson had the ball right there. He was supposed to be the blocker, linebacker. He was supposed to be the blocker. And Jordy Nelson, clapped his hands. He had the ball coming right to him. He was a hands guy. This guy was supposed to – he ignored his assignment, and then he's going to say, I want to be the hero. So he went up to try to catch it on the onside kick. And that's who fumbled the ball back to them. After that play, they cut it.
Yeah, you guys still had a chance to close out the game. Do you think the defense let you down in that last drive? Do you put blame on the defense? Do you still put?
I don't put the blame on the defense, really.
Okay.
Even though the guys Jamon Williams gave up that long touchdown in overtime, but they kind of wore down. But if the offense and these other guys wouldn't have made so many mistakes, they would have won easily. They was up by like 18, 19 points in the fourth quarter.
I really thought they were gonna do it.
I was already celebrating.
With any good team, you can't give them a chance, man, and they gave up too many chances. Now, do you feel like that particular game is the reason why Mike McCarthy gave up his play calling duty?
Yeah, it is. There's been complaints about him putting too much time in letting the rest of the team kind of go unlooked at and stuff. But he was putting too much time in offense. He needed to spread himself out more. So yeah, and then all his mistakes happened. So he realized it, and he's a big man enough to step down.
It's a strange situation because the GM went on record as saying he had no idea that McCarthy was going to do that. And then my thing is, I understand from a coaching standpoint and a managerial standpoint, obviously he was putting so much time in the offense, like you said, and he said it as well. He felt that he was stretched too thin and ignoring the other concept.
But
is that not a cause of concern for the Packer Nation going into this 2015 season?
No, it's not. If you ask any Packer fan, that you talk to, whoever it is, I think Brian Malone, Jim Crasso, and all them, ask those guys, are they happy that that McCarthy stepping down because he's too conservative. He makes boneheaded calls on the goal line. He just it's been a complaint for years. Everybody I know here talks about it. We always complain about it. I'm happy. Maybe the other whoever come in and do it will be more, you know, aggressive. That's all we ask for, be aggressive. And that's another thing. He was too conservative in that whole second half. They had the game. He just started running the ball and, you know, he played right into their hands. That's what we're talking about. So, no, there's no concern. Answer that.
The Packers' 2015 offense will be run by their former wide receiver coach turned offensive coordinator, Edgar Bennett. I can't even find any information on this guy in regards to
the whole offense?
Play calling. Huh?
I didn't hear that. You said the whole offense?
He's the new offensive coordinator.
I really didn't know that. I thought they named somebody else to coordinate.
Edgar Bennett is the offensive coordinator.
I did not. I thought it was someone else. You sure? You sure they could have been the offensive coordinator? Or did he get moved up to?
I can Google it one more time, but trust me, I even made a thread about it when it happened. Because I was confused.
Yeah, he's not a bad coach now.
Yeah, but it kind of rolls into the things that people give the 49ers crap about. You got a guy who doesn't have any play calls experience calling plays. I think that's a concern, but
If we had a young quarterback and a new offense, changing offenses, Aaron Rodgers can run that thing he's getting to the point. He's almost like a Brady and a Peyton Manning. With knowing the offense, let him run it. They've been turning over to him more and more anyway the last few years. I think another reason McCarthy turned it over, he knew Rodgers was ready to just be like Peyton Manning. Just let him call the plays, let him call them plays in the red zone, and then he's more aggressive. Because like I said, that's another reason. We lost the game. I forgot about that. McCarthy just blew it, play calling wise. You know, just run in and he just got conservative, like he normally do. Rodgers is ready to take over, so that's not a problem.
Okay, so you're confident in Aaron Rodgers taking over, which, I mean, if he had to pick a quarterback, I don't think anybody would argue that he's the one that you would want. Now,
his age, 31.
How does this affect the rest of the offense in regards to how Ed Lacy utilized, how the receivers are utilized? Do you feel like still going to run smoothly? Will there be a learning curve? Or an adjustment period, which is what I'm trying to get to.
So what are you saying? You think that they may run less because Rodgers will be calling it more?
I mean, competitive individual. I don't see him doing a lot of what Peyton Manning does now, and audibling to a lot of draws and stuff like that. Or like last year, he audibled to a lot of run plays. To my knowledge, I don't see him being that type of person. I think he's got he's got every right to be as cocky as he is mentally. I feel like he's more aggressive play caller. He's gonna call his pass plays or call his routes.
Why I disagree with that is because Rodgers knows more than anybody the importance of a running game. He's seen how Eddie Lacy has, you know, back the defense off of him now, and, you know, play actions are working better. So he's going to do what they was doing, what McCarthy was doing, because Aaron Rodgers is one that felt the brunt of that when the line wasn't blocking and when we didn't have no running game. So he, you know, he was the one getting sacked and leading the league and getting sacked for like three straight years. You know, he knows what Eddie Lacy has brought. So he's not going to change. He's not going to change.
Okay.
In fact, he may even run more. You know.
Okay.
So that's a fact. You know, I mean, it's amazing they won the Super Bowl that year when they virtually had no running game, no blocking. So that's why when I attested the greatness of Aaron Rodgers, you know, a lot of people don't understand what he went through.
Yeah, he definitely he didn't have that great of a
running game.
of a running game and line and stuff those years, especially the year that he won the Super Bowl. I just think it's a testimony to the Green Bay Packers, and for anybody listening, it's a testimony. They usually keep their players. They're a very stable organization when it comes to player turnover. And the offseason and this whole podcast has been just smooth because there's not much to talk about in regards to change with the Green Bay Packers from 2014 to 2015. The most notable thing really is Mike McCarthy giving up his play calling duties. I mean, you guys released A.J. Hawk, which we all agree was not really any good. You re-signed Elijah, you re-signed Kuhn, who everybody loves, he's a good fullback. You re-signed Randall Cobb, which was expected and necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's nothing really to talk about with the 2015 offseason. And like I said, that's a testimony to your organization's stability.
Yeah, that's a philosophy that they have, that Ted Thompson has. That's his philosophy. Is draft and develop. You know, we didn't like it at first. I'm not going to lie. I didn't like it that much either. You want to see that excitement of the free agents and, you know, all this stuff. But, you know, he's boring. He just drafts, and then they develop these players, and then they re-sign their own. So that's why we was excited, you know, the re-signing of Cobb and whoever else.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they do. Balaga, that's a key signing. We needed to have keep Balaga to keep that line solidified.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the philosophy, draft and develop.
Yeah. Well, draft and develop is what you guys did because you got 8 picks in this draft, and none has round 7. You have 3 6-round picks, and then rounds 1 through 5. Who is your favorite draft pick from this draft? I'll tell you right now, most of the analysts I read gave you guys a low B, high B minus grade. They didn't necessarily like a lot of your picks. So who do you think?
Yeah, because they're not exciting. Exciting picks.
Do you see anybody
but,
with any potential?
That I like.
Yeah.
I like all the draft picks. You know, the first two they got, we needed defensive backs, young defensive backs that can contest the ball. That's why I was glad they got rid of Tremont Williams and Devon, the other guy they lost. Defensive back, he's a backup defensive back. We lost those two because they let them go. They didn't want to resign.
Mm-hmm.
But we needed those two we drafted. First was Demarius Randall from Arizona State, and then Quentin Rollins. They big, still physical and fast, and they contest. I like them, and then I like the first four. I like Ty Montgomery. They said he's like a bigger version of Randall Cobb from Stanford, the wide receiver. And he's a kick returner, explosive kick returner. And most of all, I was going to say, most of all, last but not least, was that linebacker they drafted from Michigan. They got him in the fourth round when everybody was, you know, all over him. We want that one of them linebackers in the, you know, the first round, end of the first round. One of those inside backers, like from Clemson and one from Miami, one from, you know, they wanted them, but he just waited and he got the defensive backs they needed. And then they was able to look at Jake Ryan. He played outside linebacker at Michigan, but he was an inside linebacker before he got hurt at Michigan. He had hurt his knee. And so now that he has the experience of playing inside, so they got to move him to inside back. Everybody say he's a natural. So he's going to be a starter. That fourth round pick out of Michigan, Jake Ryan.
Yeah, I look at the draft and I see potential, which I guess is cliche to say, but I kind of understand the philosophy of this particular draft and the way that the Packers went about. It's a very New England Patriot type of approach. You take what you need. But you can see how they tapered off in the middle rounds, looking for guys that they think have a certain skill set or certain upside that they can work with.
And they look for guys like they did with Jake Ryan, and then the first round pick, guys that can play like cornerback. They can play like two different positions. They played like corner and safety. They looked at a guy, Randall, as a safety, but he got cornerback speed and skills. So they say they're going to move him to corner. And other people overlooked those guys because they played certain positions, but the Packers know who can switch positions.
The knock on Randall was that he was a little bit undersized for a safety, but they liked the fact that he's willing to hit and stuff like that. From what I was reading, they're going to use him like the 49ers tried to use Jimmy Ward, a nickelback / extra safety just in case, but primarily
nickelback. But he's going to be a corner. He's going to be a corner, but he's not going to start right away because we got the other guys coming back.
Well, I mean, the site I was using, I always use the SB Nation. Fan sites, those guys give a lot of good analysis. But I was laughing because they've got it. They were talking about Brett Hundley, the round five pick, and how worst case scenario, they'd rather see Randall Cobb at backup quarterback than him. I think the kid has potential. It's just the one thing that concerns me with the quarterback and you're hitting it to the league, if you're uncomfortable in a pocket, like a pocket collapsing around you, if you're uncomfortable, I don't see a future in the league. Because it don't matter who you have blocks in front of you. You can have the best lineman in the world, and there's always going to be one or two times where a guy gets leverage and he's pushing the line and stuff.
As what's his name showed, the quarterback of the Bears, what's his name? The quarterback, the Bears quarterback,
Jay Cutler.
And you could have the strongest arm and everything, but then when you just get rattled every time under pressure and turn the ball over and do this and that, you're going to be a pathetic quarterback. To prove your point. But yeah, Hundley believes that he's great though in his own head. He has confidence.
Yeah. So it's not all bad. Quentin Rollins, I tell you what I don't like about Rollins is the fact that I didn't know this dude had never played football in his last of college. He played 4 years of basketball. Maybe 3 years of basketball. He's primarily a basketball player, and then he switched to cornerback. But the scouts are saying that they like it. They said he's a natural. He's got good feet and stuff like that. But
people just got athletic ability. You know, he's a quick twitch athlete. Man, he's an athlete. Look at y'all's guy, Jimmy Graham. No, you're not. You don't like Seattle, like San Francisco. But Jimmy Graham, he switched to the last minute. lot of these guys do it.
Yeah, well, the thing is, when you see a guy switch last minute, they usually play like tight end or in Arik's particular instance, he played defensive line. It's very rare you see somebody switch last minute to a position like cornerback. It's really tough. It's really tough. But but like I said, you know, people speak highly enough of people that I respect their opinions that speak highly enough of him, and they think he can fill in because and be of some use.
Because of his experience.
My pick to make an instant impact was Jake Ryan too. Before I even got your opinion, I'd already made up in my mind.
Oh, okay.
They really like Jake Ryan. Jake Ryan's actually still got the athletic ability to be able to play outside linebacker as well as need be. They were saying that the thing about him is he can be, in their mind, as interchangeable with outside and inside linebacker as Clay Matthews was. So
That's what they're looking at him as. What they want to do is get another starter and then inside back, because they can move Clay to back to outside. But everybody's saying that Clay's going to just stay inside. That's what I'm hearing lately.
Yeah.
He has more impact.
You know, people always like to give that scenario, well, if this happens, then this can happen. So, I think overall, it's a draft to add depth. And we're about to roll into our 2015 predictions. That's the only real knock I've got on the Green Bay Packers from 2014 and 2015. It's just that you guys lack depth in the middle. So you're top heavy. Like, your starters are legit, but your backups are unproven. They don't have a lot of snaps. And that would be a cause of concern for any
on defense you're talking about.
Yeah,
on defense,
even on your offensive side, your offensive line and stuff, people were saying. I know Pro Football Focus has you guys.
Yeah.
They do color ratings, and I can post this later for you too as well. Just remind me, but they do color ratings, and you got elite status as blue is as high as you can go. Aaron Rodgers is elite. Jordy Nelson is elite. I think they have Randall Cobb as elite as well. But for the most part, everybody was good or elite or average as a starter. But then there's a lot of gray, purple, and light purple, which is like undrafted free agents, rookies, not enough.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that in your depth chart after we get past your starters. And that's the only part of concern that I think most people have.
My question is, who with these rosters down to, 40-something men now, 50-man rosters, you know, who does have world-class blue depth all the way through? Who does?
Well, it's not necessarily looking for world-class backup talent, but the experience.
Right.
And I think, man,
that's
the thing. If let's say you have two linemen get hurt, you know, you're going to be stuck with two guys who only play a combined four snaps of NFL ball in front of Aaron Rodgers. And, you know, like things like that, things that can kind of knock you guys off just a little bit. But every team's facing that.
But that's what they do.
I think
that's what their philosophy is. That's a minute ago to draft and develop. They just stay young every year. And they expect their rookies and young players to be. They expect rookies to be almost like second-year players by after, like, week eight. And then they expect second-year guys, they expect you to take a jump. Like Devontae Adams, they expect him to make a serious jump this year at wide receiver. They expect this.
Yeah.
So they are going to be young. You know, that's how they do.
Yeah, and the same thing I said earlier is very Patriot-like approach. I think the Patriots do that as well.
It is.
Patriots also have
yeah.
they also have a knack of being slick and picking up a veteran or two. in some positions. But it is what it is. I mean, you guys stayed relatively healthy last year.
That was the key. They changed a lot of what they was doing before. They changed it up. They experimented with things and just did different things to keep everybody healthy. Cut back on practices. They did a lot of things. It finally worked.
Yeah. Well, hopefully those things work this year because we're going to roll into the schedule. It's not an easy schedule.
I see that.
It is a little bit easier, maybe. Depending on, I haven't done the Vikings analysis yet, but depending on how well they are, I personally think that's the only real competition in your division.
Who is that?
And it's the Vikings.
Who is that?
The Minnesota Vikings.
You said that's the only competition?
I think so. I don't think the Lions are going to do well as people think.
What?
I'm telling you, I'm high on the Vikings. I think systematically or scheme-wise and personnel-wise, they match up very well with the Packers.
I agree with that. Vikings going to be good. But Detroit is still going to be good. Just because they lost Sue doesn't mean they're going to go away. They're going to be good.
No, I think so. It's not necessarily Sue because they replaced him with a Haloti Ngata.
You can't say he replaced enough. You can't just say that easily now. Come on.
Well, Ngata ain't chopped liver. Like Haloti Ngata is. He's not Sue, but he's an athlete. He's not a pass rusher like Sue.
He's not a pass rusher like Sue.
Not.
He's a run stuffer. Sue does it all. But they're not going to go down because of that. Their offense is going to still be high up there. Then the defense is going to still be good. So
Detroit, I expect them
to be up there. Huh?
They lost Sue and Fairley.
Yeah, but when was Fairley healthy? When is he healthy? Anybody remember?
He was healthy enough last year. He didn't play the last eight games.
He didn't play in the last eight games. No, he was out. He was out. And they still was good. They already had replaced him. So, I don't even count him. So, don't even count him. It's just Sue, really, that they miss. Yeah. I expect Detroit to be right up there. They should be right there in Minnesota. I don't know how Chicago's going to do, though.
But we can definitely write off Chicago.
That's still a rival. We can't write them off.
They might be a rival, but dang, he's really good. I thought he played more than that. All right, well, either way.
How many did they say he played?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games. You're right.
I said he missed about the last 8. Shoot, I know my division. I'll tell you everything about this NFC North.
I'm still sticking with my story. Vikings going to be the surprise team of the year. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, I agree. They've been drafting well the last couple of years. You know.
Yeah.
And then Bridgewater is good.
We'll do the records like I did everybody else. We'll start with the first four. You got Bears, Seahawks, or at Chicago.
Yeah.
You got the Seahawks
at home.
And then you got to go to Levi and play the 49ers.
Oh, yeah. We got some revenge games in the first two out of the first four.
Your first four games, who do you have your record at?
Let me see. I said it'd be Chicago. We're going to be Seattle. We're going to be Kansas City. Then beat San Francisco. I'll say 4-0 after the first four.
You got them 4-0?
4-0. Seattle, they just chomping at the bits of Seattle. We got some tape bags.
I'll give you 3-1. I'm going to say 3-1. I don't know which one.
I would like to say the 49 again because I'm a fan, but I mean, let's be, I'm going to be realistic on my podcast here. I don't know what to expect from my team other than they're going to win more than the three games that most people expect. But
yeah, they're going to win more than one, but it's not going to be against the Packers.
Yeah, the only thing that might be helping them is that is at home. But I really like the Chiefs to come in and give you guys a little bit of a tough game.
Oh, you know what? You're right. I mean, I'm just saying that's going to be a trash game.
Yeah,
that's going to be a trash
game.
And it's in between. It's right after Seattle. They're going to have all that emotion for Seattle.
Yeah.
They could have a letdown the next week at home. I've seen it before.
Yeah.
So then they're looking ahead to San Francisco because we got some business with them we got to tend to. So,
yeah.
So, I can see that. I can see that.
Let me check something real quick. These schedules be funny. So you guys play on the 20th and then the 20th. Okay, all right. Why does that say? Oh, it's a Sunday night game. All right. So you got a Sunday night game, the Seahawks, and then you got the next week you got a Monday night game against the Chiefs. So you might actually be okay because that's a good little break right there. You might actually be okay.
It's a break. A Sunday night, then a Monday night?
Yeah, a Sunday night, then a Monday night.
Oh, okay.
And they're both home games,
okay.
So you don't travel or anything. So you might,
but
you guys might be okay on that one. But
I know what you're saying, though. I've seen it.
Yeah, it's regardless of how the teams stack up record-wise, that's three tough defenses. Seahawks, Chiefs, and 49ers. You're still going to get a tough front from the 49ers. The Chiefs arguably have one of the top defensive fronts as well, and we already know how Seattle plays their defense. So it'll be a good early test for your team. Those first four games. So going into week 5 and week 6, you got the Rams and the Chargers. Both are home games. You got a bye week 7, and then you get on the road and you play the Broncos and
Baltimore,
and then you got to go to Carolina and play the Panthers. So your second set of four games, how do you see you guys doing?
I can see them getting upset by Denver. At Denver, but then again, you said it's right after a bye week.
Yeah, week 7 is the bye week. Week 8, you go to Denver, and then you got to go.
Oh, that may help. Because McCarthy is pretty good coming off a bye week. Their record is like 7-1 or something in the last few years.
Yeah, y'all got a real friendly schedule when it comes to traveling.
When it comes to what?
When it comes to traveling, you guys have a real friendly schedule.
Why you say that?
Because you got the Bears, then you got two home games, then you go to San Francisco, then you got two home games, then you get a bye week, then you go to Denver, you go to Carolina, but you come back and you get a home game, and then you got to play the Vikings. That's still technically not that far to travel. So you got after those two road games, you got Lions, then you're at Minnesota, then you got a home game against the Bears, then you're at the Lions. Those four division games are pretty much right on top of each other, so you're not necessarily traveling a lot.
Yeah.
So that's a
tough stretch, though, to have that many road division games in a row. You know.
Oh, no, definitely a tough stretch, but it's still friendly enough that at least you know that you're not going to have a whole lot of jet lag or anything like that. Not to get too sidetracked, but the reason why I pointed that out, I read earlier today in an article that the 49ers had the most travel miles of any team this year, and they're not even going to London, and they still, because they have to go West Coast, East Coast a whole lot.
That's a recipe for disaster.
West Coast, East Coast. On a lot of these schedules now,
see who's got Thursday night games and who's traveling where, things I didn't normally pay attention to. But you guys seem, like I said, seem to have a nice little schedule. You got a 3-1 on the second set of four games.
From Carolina to Chicago? Is that what you're talking about?
No, I actually messed up. I meant the Rams. You got the home games against the Rams, Chargers, bye week. Then you go to Denver.
Oh.
Then you go to Carolina. That's four.
Oh, let me see. At home, they should be St. Louis at home. They should be San Diego at home. I don't know. Dang, I may be looking at another 4-0. Because, like, the only thing I'll say, Denver, we're coming off a bye week. And then Carolina, they're going to beat Carolina. But, so that could be another 4-0. I may have to say we had 8-0 heading into week 9.
All right. I got y'all at
6-2. Oh, my God. You're giving us losses.
Nah, man. Look. The Broncos got a good squad, man. They're gonna be healthy by. They're gonna be healthy in week 8. If it was later in the
season, yeah, I agree.
I would say, but at Mile High and stuff, and it's another Sunday night game. That's gonna be live, man.
Yeah, it's gonna be tough. I know what you're saying. The only reason I heard you say that bye week before, and McCarthy's record is so great after bye weeks. That's the only reason I'm giving them a chance. I can see them losing that one, too.
Yeah. So we can go to the next four. We've got this is your four division games. So you're at home against the Lions. Then you travel to Minnesota. Then you're at home against the Bears. And then you travel to
Detroit.
For Thursday night game, it looks like. Is that Thursday night game? Let me double check that date.
I don't like the dates. I just had a team.
Yep. Oh, man. December 3rd is a Thursday night game.
Which one? Detroit?
Yeah, so you got two Thursday night games. You got the Thanksgiving game with the Bears, and then you travel to Detroit the next Thursday and play there.
It's two straight. Dang. Two division games on Thursday. So I can see them losing at Detroit. I can see that one. I think they'll beat Detroit at home, beat Minnesota and Chicago. Then they'll lose at Detroit.
So you got them 3-1?
Yeah, and that's good.
All right.
I got you
3-1, too. I think that road game against Detroit is going to be tough.
On a Thursday night. Yes, thank you.
All right. So then,
that's one.
Then we get to the part where I think is the most interesting part of your schedule. Because at this point, you're going to be vying for, I think, home field for the playoffs, not necessarily a division. I think by now you'll have the division locked. But you're looking at home field. So your last four games, home game against the Cowboys, at Oakland, at Arizona, and then the home game against the Vikings at the very end.
Okay, I see them beating Dallas. At revenge to send a message that wasn't a catch, and I see them beating Dallas, beating Oakland. I can see them losing at Arizona, and then beating Minnesota at home. So 3-1 in that stretch.
3-1 in that stretch.
Yeah. Just to send a message that, they should. They're going to be better this year.
Yeah.
If
they're healthy. If
they're quarterback.
Personally, I think the Cowboys are going to have more problems than we anticipate heading into this season. So I'm going to favor you guys that game. I have no problem favoring you against the Raiders. That Cardinals game is tough to me. That Vikings game is going to be live, but you're at home. I don't see a game at home. So,
they never lose at home in that last game. Never.
Yeah.
The division's on the line, they win every time. I tell you right now. But
so I got y'all
at Dallas,
12-4.
Yeah, that sounds about good.
You got them at 14-2.
It's possible, but I would say either 14-2 or 13-3. It is more than likely 13-3. More than likely.
There are, and you know, for people who might listen to this and think you're crazy, like I said, we're factoring in the home games, the road games. It's a travel friendly schedule. Talking about a team that was 12-4 last year. Even though the division has improved slightly, you got great improvement as well, and you've got a whole lot of continuity on that offense. And that offense is going to score regardless because you still have the best quarterback in the league. You still have
And one thing you're forgetting, that he's going to be healthy this year. We'll be able to run that unlike he was the last part of the year. He was he was just unstoppable when he was running and throwing. There was nothing defenses could do. He'll be back to that this year. Ask New England about that, please.
So you're 14-2, my 12-4. We can agree on 13-3. And with this, speaking from a best case scenario situation, 13-3.
Mm-hmm.
But again, if they were 14-2 or if they were 12-4, I don't think anybody would have an argument that the Packers did anything that you didn't expect. They're going to be a good team, a real good team.
I think they'll be the best in the league. Okay.
I kept you over about 12 minutes, but I'm going to let you take us out. You have the last word on how you think the Green Bay Packers are going to do, anything you want people to know about your team.
I was saying all season, and I'm saying it again, I think we'll have the best team in the league. And that's just the bottom line. And that obviously means they should win the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of – they have a lot of motivation with some of the best teams as revenge factors to keep them motivated. That loss to Seattle was, you know, just they've been on their mind all offseason. And they can't wait to play them. But one last thing, one good thing is that we opened the season against an arch rival in the Bears, so they won't be flat in that game. And, you know, most of they would normally be looking ahead to Seattle. But with Chicago, they'll be up for that game. So I'm glad about that, having an arch rival. But, yeah, I think they're the best team in the league. Bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all I have to say.
All right, well, I appreciate you calling in. What I'll probably end up doing, like I told everybody else that talked to me, might try to get you guys on a mid-season roundup or something.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll follow up throughout the season at least once to see, you know, go back over what we talked about and see if teams are meeting expectations.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right,
so when is this going to be posted?
This will be up. I usually wait overnight to let it load up on the site, and then I'll post it first thing in the morning. I'll tag you in it.
Okay. All right. All right, appreciate
man.
It. Enjoyed it. All right.
All right, guys. So that was me and Wallace talking about the Green Bay Packers. He's a Green Bay Packer. He can't even be called a fan. He's a fanatic to the fullest. He knows his team, loves his team, has high hopes for his team this year. Given the other teams that I've done podcasts on so far, I think the Packers are the most poised to get to a Super Bowl. I don't want to put that on them in regards to Super Bowl or bust expectations because, like we highlighted or like I talked about, they're very top-heavy. So So if worst case scenario, you have three key injuries, which these things do happen, I don't know if they have the depth to overcome something like that. So Super Bowl expectations are they're kind of on a string. So it just takes maybe one or two key injuries that might derail them a little bit. But if they are as healthy as they were last year, they're going to be a problem. All right. So I appreciate you guys listening. If you like this podcast or any of the podcasts that we have on the Iconoclastically Bombastic Network, you can always check us out again on Twitter at sports_ID, on Facebook, Iconoclastically Bombastic Sports. We do TV. We also have movies and music groups. Or you can also go to our website, iconoclasticallybombastic.com, and click on the Amazon banner and support our podcast and our group through the Amazon banner. Anything that you purchase through the Amazon banner, a portion of those proceeds will go towards our group. So, again, thanks for listening, and this is IBS Eases.